Chapter 6, Believing and Living. Deep sorrow is a hard schoolmaster. It pages through your theory books, criticizing every concept and notion you have erected in your defense against your pain. You need to make sense of it, and nothing but a solid understanding of objective theology will support you in the quicksand of relentless grief. Death is unnatural for a human being. Death came as a result of the fall. It is therefore no wonder that the human mind struggles to understand the concepts of death and come to terms with it. Death deals a blow that leaves loved ones reeling and staggering because it snatches and destroys what seems so permanent. It is likely to leave you yearning to know what is truly permanent and solid, something to hold on to as you deal with the transient nature of life. As I write, it has been 9 years since my eldest brother Wayne was called home to glory. I still sometimes dream about him. My dreams always seem to be an effort of my mind to work out a rational explanation for his absence. This has also been my experience since losing Charlene. As an example of what I'm saying, the other night I dreamt about her. In my dream, I was at a church camp hosted by another church. While mingling with the other campers who dotted the campsite, I entered one of the dormitories. In the dormitory, Charlene was busy preparing her bed for the night. She looked up and smiled in greeting. "Ah," I said to her, "so this is where you have been all this time." I was so happy to have solved the mystery of her absence at last. When I awoke, of course, the reality of her absence came down upon me again, as it often did when waking up. This is the time when a flimsy spider's web belief system will fail to sustain you in the gravity of the reality of separation through death. Nothing has been more valuable to me in facing the life-scrambling aftermath of grief than a proper theological framework within which to think. Your framework needs to be significantly more mature than the notions put forward by babbling crowds of pastors today. They say things like this: "You must not find yourself living in bondage to poverty, sickness, disease, or death. Jesus died on the cross to set you free." If your understanding of how God relates to Christians requires Him to grant you freedom from such calamities, you will struggle to make sense of the death of loved ones whose lives were devoted to Christ. It will unsettle you at the deepest level when you find yourself in a doctor's office receiving the news that you have contracted a terminal disease. You may be able to play clever word games for a time, convincing yourself that what you believe is true, and that you have simply interpreted reality wrongly. But when it comes to death, you can no longer deny the cold fact. Everyone you know will die. You will die. How does that fit into God's universe? Is it only people who lack sufficient faith who die? Is death an illusion? Is death a friend to be embraced? If God loves you and has the power to prevent these calamities, why has He not prevented this calamity in your life? The framework of theology necessary to carry you with power through crises such as the death of a person very dear to you is not born in the moment of crisis. It is a beautiful jewel that is discovered, studied, and appreciated over time. It is a network of truth that is solid and unassailable. It is a fabric that forms a part of who you are, so that when you come under assault, you respond in the way you do because of the person you have become, grounded in the objective facts of the gospel. This, I have discovered in pastoral work, is the very point at which far too many people suffer poverty in our time. In this chapter, I would like to set you off in the right direction. When I speak about grasping a theological framework that can sustain you in your grief, people often look at me with unveiled confusion in their eyes. The next level of confusion is to link what I am teaching with the nearest thing they know to Christianity, a local church they may have attended on occasion when they were children. From there, they walked away with some moral lessons from Bible stories, be like Daniel, or don't be like Samson, or God will bless you, but only if you allow Him to. These and millions of other notions form the empty chatter of Christian communities, notions that can't support you in your hour of dire need. When I speak about a theological framework, I'm speaking about developing an understanding, love, and appreciation for the following truths by reading and studying resources such as Wayne Grudem's Systematic Theology, J.I. Packer's Knowing God, Charles Spurgeon's myriad of transcribed sermons and books, John F. MacArthur's many books and sermons, John Piper's books such as Future Grace, God is the Gospel, Desiring God, and others, one of the many Puritan paperbacks, the expositions of Dr. D. Martin Lloyd-Jones of texts like Paul's Letter to the Romans, Paul's Letter to the Ephesians, and the Sermon on the Mount, many books written on practical life issues by outstanding writers of our day such as Dr. Wayne Mack and Dr. J. E. Adams, freely downloadable sermons from powerful preachers such as Dr. Albert E. Martin. There are many more resources, but these will set you on the right road. To bypass quality teaching such as this is to send yourself on an extended journey of emotional turmoil and confusion that will eventually drive you back to a quest for the truth.